Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier- und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
You may have asked yourself at least once in your life, if you could go back in time, what would you change? I never contemplated that question until recently. And now I think about it every day. Regret my decision to ever join that damned experiment. If I knew then what I knew now, I would have taken the pencil from Richard's desk and stabbed him in the neck over and over until he died. Jail time would be a small price to pay for that. Let me take it from the top. I work as an assistant in genetics at a college, which you may not have heard of before. Either way, to keep things safe, I won't disclose any important information to protect myself and anyone else who may be somehow related to the matter. Professor Richards was a prominent person in the college, adored by both students and his co-workers for his dedication to work, extensive knowledge, and ability to motivate his attendees to contribute in the lessons and outside of them. He often conducted projects here and there, small experiments to prove or debunk a theory or something else. And more often than not, he had a plethora of student volunteers who were willing to do all the work for him. I rarely participated in any of the projects, save for when it really piqued my interest on a matter that I really wanted to see the results on. Richards trusted me the most and always gave me the most sensitive tasks to perform, passing on his knowledge onto me in the process. More often than not, he was like a fatherly figure to me, rather than a superior. He could probably sense that I grew up without a father's love, so he stepped in to take me under his wing. Now, when I look back, I start to realize that he probably never really cared, but needed someone that he could use for his twisted, insidious intentions. It all started a few months ago, when he invited me into his office with a proposal he was very excited about. "How would you like to be a part of history, Victor?" he asked me. Of course, I was always willing to take up big projects, especially if there was a chance for recognition, so I immediately answered yes. "Well, we have one big project upcoming," Richard said. "The biggest one yet. If everything goes well with it, we'll be famous and rich. You'll never have to work as an assistant another day in your life." I asked him what this was about, and he handed me a folder. When I opened it, I saw, with big, bold letters, the name: The Vitality Project. In short, the documents described what the project would be about, who would participate, and how long it would last. The purpose of the project was simple: find female test subjects that were unable to conceive children and artificially impregnate them. Aside from Richards and I, there would be 12 volunteering students from the college and 5 female test subjects. I carefully reviewed the documents and saw that the project was funded by the college. Not that I had any suspicions about Richards' authenticity at the time anyway. He said that if I wanted to participate, I would have to sign an NDA and make sure not to tell anyone, under the threat of federal violation and long jail time. The same went for the students. If they told anyone about the project, including their family members, they risked getting kicked out of college and facing jail time. Although I disliked the idea of being chained down like that, at the time, it seemed like a small price to pay for such greatness. I signed it, and Richards whipped out 2 Cuban cigars. "Been saving these for a special occasion. Doesn't get any more special than this," he said, as he gave one to me and lit it up. I was scheduled to meet Richards in the biology and genetics building in 2 days, and when I arrived, I was surprised to see a guardhouse instead of a gate and a guard sitting inside. The college had somehow managed to set this thing up seemingly overnight. The guard asked for my name, and I gave it to him, too confused and docile at the moment to refuse. The guard politely explained that, with the upcoming project, the college had to hire a security company to keep things safe. He said there were 5 guards in total, each stationed in a separate part of the campus, with one guard being in the biology building at all times. I asked if the guard knew what the project was about, but they seemed oblivious to it. All they knew was that they had to keep the college grounds safe from any suspicious or violent activities. I gave him a courteous smile and left to meet Richards. When I arrived, another guard stood in front of Richards' office and stopped me from entering. "It's okay, he's with me," Richards shouted, and the guard let me through. I went inside, and all of the project participants were there, including the students and the 5 female subjects. The subjects were women between the ages of 20 and 28, and while Richards and I were permitted to go home at the end of the day, the students and subjects had to remain inside the building at all times. "Professor Richards, we don't have adequate rooms for them to stay here," I said. "Everything has been arranged," Richards said. "The students will be staying on the 2nd floor, while the subjects will be on the 3rd floor. Since the project is so secretive, the guard is not permitted to leave the 1st floor. His job here will be to prevent anyone unwanted from entering the building, or in the worst case scenario, to stop students from leaving before the project is over. Unless they sign the paper to void the contract, that is, in which they would need to refund the college for the funds provided to the project. Trust me when I say, the funds are extremely high, and you probably wouldn't want to do it. Now, let's show you all to your rooms." My eyes widened when we went up to the 2nd floor, and I realized that 2 of the classrooms have been completely rearranged into unrecognizable rooms. Instead of chairs and desks, there were night tables and beds, giving off the impression of a dorm rather than a study building. The 3rd floor was even stranger, with the classrooms not only being rearranged, but the entire floor renovated to seemingly have a row of 5 doors which led into tiny cells. The women were each assigned a cell and locked. It was explained that this was for their own safety, but should they want to drop out of the experiment at any given moment, they were free to do so. Again, he emphasized the price they'd have to pay for such a choice. I started getting a bad feeling by this point. None of this seemed right, and no matter how many times Richard uttered the word voluntary, nothing seemed so about this. The students and the women seemed very enthusiastic, however, and were hanging on every word the professor said, obeying orders without questions. On the first day, the crew went to the lab and created a solution, which was to be put into vials and injected into the subjects. Each student had his own role, ranging from performing subject checkups, preparing food for the project members, taking blood samples, etc. My duty was to oversee the entire situation and assist if necessary, while providing medical help in case of emergency. At around 3 p.m, all initial tests had been completed, so Richards instructed the students to go back to the dorm rooms while he told me to follow him into his office. He sat by his computer, a wide grin on his face and the satisfaction of a job well done for the day. "I'll have one task for you, Victor," he said. "You may go home whenever you want, but what I may need your help with is monitoring the subjects. Come here." He gestured, and I went around his table to look at the PC screen. On the screen were 5 camera feeds monitoring the subject cells. "I'll be sleeping in the office," he said, "but if something comes up for me, I will need you to monitor the subjects." It sounded like an order, not a request. "Sure, Professor, you can count on me," I said, trying to hide my uncertainty. "All right, well, that's it for the day. You can go home, get some rest. We have a lot of work ahead of us tomorrow." For days, nothing changed, and the crew perform their regular duties during the day. And then, about a week later, subjects 2 and 4 started to complain about the extreme isolation they were subjected to. They asked to be let out, but Richards outright refused, reminding them about the cost they would need to pay. Despite that, Subject 2 protested, so Richards ordered one of the students to sedate her. He did as instructed, and the subject fell asleep. It was around 8 p.m. when I went into Richards' office to report the day's findings and realized that Subject 2 was still asleep. "Professor Richards, the subject should not be asleep for that long," I said. "She shouldn't," he said. "But she's not sleeping. She's been euthanized." My eyes widened in terror. "What did you say?" I asked. "We couldn't risk letting her out. The student doesn't know what he did. So let's keep it that way. We don't want him racking himself with guilt." "Are you out of your mind? You killed her," I raised my voice, to which he gave me a stern look. "Know your place, boy," he said. "This project is the most important thing we'll ever work on. We can't let it go to waste because some nobody decided to opt out and disclose secret information." "You can't be serious," I shouted. "I am," he said. "And Subject 4 has been complaining as well. I'm going to need you to euthanize her." "That's out of the question." We had a heated discussion, and I told him I'd be leaving the project and reporting him to the police when he whipped out the papers and showed them to me. He pointed to the section, which showed that I agreed to be part of the project until it was finished, and that if there came to any misconduct, all participants would be treated as equally guilty. "You ass," I said. He simply smirked and told me to do my job, handing me the injection. I hesitated for a long time, but in the end, I had to do it. I was afraid of going to prison so much that I didn't care if I had to end someone else's life. That doesn't take away from the fact that I felt extremely guilty giving the patient an injection while lying to her face that she'd be back to her husband tomorrow by noon. Richards even made me dispose of the bodies and made me agree on a story with him to tell the students that the subjects were released in the middle of the night. I agreed to everything he said, feeling sick to my stomach. He told me to go home and take the next day off. I did as he commanded, and needless to say, I got no sleep that night. I battled with myself the entire day on whether I should go to the authorities, but again, I was too selfish and afraid for myself to do so. When I returned to work the following day, I found Richards and the students in one of the classrooms, ecstatic. When I asked what was going on, Richards said, "Victor, we did it. Subjects 1 and 3 are pregnant. This is a huge breakthrough in science." My jaw dropped. I honestly haven't even thought about the potential success of the project, so I was surprised to say the least. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't excited myself. This was indeed a breakthrough in science. We wasted no time performing checkups on the subjects, taking blood samples, etc. Over the next few days, the subjects' weights had been increasing rapidly and their stomachs had grown in size. Ultrasound displayed the growth of the fetus at an abnormal rate, and we started to get a little worried, since the size we'd seen by then was not supposed to be visible by the first trimester, let alone after just 3 weeks. Richards ordered us to carefully monitor the subjects in case their health starts to slip up. And then came the worst day that I experienced during the project. It was day 26, I remember distinctly, and Subject 1 was complaining about the severe pain in her stomach. I examined her, and her baby was kicking with extreme force, so much that I could see the bulges from the impact on the subject's stomach. I begged Richards to take the subject to a hospital, but he wouldn't hear it. He told me to give her some painkillers and get back into his office. By this time, the students were already asleep in their rooms, and since the cells on the third floor were soundproof, not even the subjects from the adjacent cells heard the woman screaming, let alone anyone else. Richards and I observed subject one on camera as she writhed in pain. She banged on the floor, begging to be let out, after which she lay on the bed, holding her stomach and screaming in pure agony. I saw her stomach stretching out, as if something poked it from the inside, and then her skin ripped open and a tiny hand emerged. Blood sprayed out like a fountain, and I saw a deformed, blood-covered head pop out, further opening the abdomen. The subject screamed, now more in terror than pain, as she helplessly watched the baby burst through her stomach. Only seconds later, her head dropped onto the bed and she stopped moving. The baby started crying, but it was a kind of cry I had never heard before. It sounded guttural and gurgling. Victor, what are you waiting for? Richards yelled. Go take care of the baby. I stared at the thing on the camera, unable to move. Whatever that thing was, it wasn't human. It had an abnormally large head, extremities of unequal proportions, and a voice that sounded anything but human. It cried vigorously for a while, gradually losing its potency and going completely silent. Victor! Richards yelled again, but I was frozen in place. Richards violently stood up and stormed out of his office. I saw on the camera that he was entering cell one. I came to my senses and figured that I had to ensure myself somehow or stop the project. I browsed Richard's desktop and found the folder containing the details of the project. I glanced at the camera and realized that Richards was examining the dead baby and mother. I entered his email and sent all the details of the project to my email, nervously tapping on the desk as files transferred. Richards was done wrapping the bodies in a sheet and started coming back. So as soon as the email was sent, I deleted the sent email and returned to the camera feed, stepping away from the PC. Richards burst inside, beads of sweat forming on his temple. Are they dead? I asked. Of course they're dead, you idiot. I should report you to the project stakeholders for insubordination. Excuse me? If you had arrived in time, the baby subject could have survived. That's not true. I'm not even trained to handle this sort of situation. Richard sat in his chair and exhaled deeply, rubbing his eyes. The bodies are wrapped up. Take them into the basement, he said sternly. I dreaded the idea of carrying around a dead mother and her infant, but I didn't want to defy the professor right now to avoid arousing suspicion. I hauled the bodies downstairs and returned to Richard's office, who still seemed pretty mad. Go home, he said, staring at the screen of his computer. Professor, if you need help, I can leave. He didn't need to tell me again. I wished him a good night and left, still shaking. As soon as I got home, I downloaded the contents of the email and deleted any remaining evidence. I could use this somehow, but I was too tired and traumatized to think of a plan. I went to bed, the events of the night replaying in my head. That night, I kept having recurring nightmares of deformed, monstrous toddlers chasing me. When I woke up, I found the reality to be barely better than the haunting nightmares, but I had to go back to work. I knew Richards had me by the balls, and I had no choice but to comply with his demands. When I arrived, the students were going about their normal, everyday activities. Richards explained that he lied to the students and told them Subject 1 had to be taken to the hospital due to complications. I was appalled by his actions, but then remembered that I'm not that much different, so I stopped myself from judging him too much. Out of the 5 subjects, only 2 remained, Subject 3 and Subject 5. Subject 5 still showed no response to the treatment, and Subject 3's stomach kept growing rapidly. And then, just 2 days after the death of Subject 1, she gave birth. Richards was ready this time, having invested in an incubator, and he delivered the baby himself. The baby was just as deformed as the one from Subject 1. Richards separated the mother and the baby without even letting her take a look at her child, much to her protests. He ordered us to close the cell as he took the baby out. We had no choice but to comply, even the students, who reluctantly followed his orders. Subject 3 cried for hours, but Richards muted the camera and focused on observing the baby in the incubator. 10 days later, the baby had grown in size enormously, reaching above 8 feet in height and over 390 pounds. It had grown long extremities. Its skin had become extremely hard, so needles could no longer penetrate it, and its face no longer resembled that of a human, with various lumps and visible deformities on it. That wasn't the only thing, though. A scan revealed that the creature itself had babies growing inside of it, at a seemingly fast pace, just like the babies of the subjects. Due to this, Richards dubbed the creature the Mother. The incubator could no longer sustain a creature of such a size, and I knew Richards could not possibly ask the college for more funds. I also knew he would not risk revealing the details of the project to the stakeholders, as they would shut it down immediately. He told me to take some time off, and that he would let me know when my services were needed again. This was bad, because I knew he was up to no good. So, to occupy myself during the sleepless nights, I reviewed the project documents that I had stolen. Sure enough, 10 days later, Richards told me to resume my duties. When I arrived, I saw an electronic door, which hadn't been there before, in his office behind his computer. It led downstairs into a basement, which was expanded onto a huge area that resembled a laboratory. There were enormous test tubes filled with green liquid all over the place, with the biggest one being at the far end of the room. Mother was there, now much bigger than I remembered it to be, seemingly sleeping, and although its stomach was bulging, I could see more. Smaller, deformed creatures in nearby incubators. Richards filled me in on the details. The mother gave birth to 3 of them and continued to create more. The scan showed 2 more babies inside her stomach. In addition to that, it would seem that the babies also carried their own babies. They are extremely sick though, so I have dubbed them the rejects. The college approved this? I asked. Of course not. They don't know about this. I use my own funding to further the research. I realized then that there were only 9 students present in the building. Where are the other participants? I asked. Richards paused before answering. They were found dead in their rooms. Suicide. The weaklings couldn't live with the knowledge of what had to be done for greatness. I also realized that Subject 3 was gone. I didn't ask him where she was, or how he disposed of the bodies. That left us with only Subject 5 remaining. She was extremely malnourished and sick, as Richard saw no use in feeding or taking care of her. Over the course of the next few days, fewer and fewer students kept showing up. More committed suicide, whereas a lot of them were killed handling the babies. It soon became apparent that the creatures were toughening up quickly, their skin becoming hard, their speed and strength increasing way above humans. Richards had one of the grown versions placed inside the cell of the previous subjects and sent one subject to feed the creature. The creature was highly aggressive, so by the time it was done with the student, what was left of him was strewn all over the cell. Everyone was aware of Richards' intentions by then, but no one dared oppose him. A lifetime in prison to put anyone off from trying anything stupid, like reporting him to the authorities. Every day, he would emphasize multiple times how we would be rich by the time we had done, or how everyone would end up in life in prison if anyone decided to betray him. he knew exactly what to say to instill fear in his subordinates, including me. Out of all the project participants, only Richards, myself, and three more students remained by day 60, and I knew it was only a matter of time until it was my turn. Things were getting out of hand, and I knew I had to put a stop to this. Richards never let anyone down in the lab without his permission, and he was the sole holder of the keycard which opened the electronic lock. But that was of no interest to me. I had to get Subject 5 and the students out of there. Based on the conversations I've had with the guards, they were loyal to their company and not to Richards, so I knew I could trust them with some of the details. I scheduled my email containing all the project data to automatically be sent to the security company and the college 12 hours after I start my shift. I then pulled the guard from my building aside. I told him everything about the project and how most of the people were dead now, to which he seemed surprised and terrified. He agreed to wait until Richards went to sleep in his room and that we would then unlock the cell and let everyone out. Before we managed to finalize our plan though, Richards called me into his office, interrupting us. I followed him there and stood in front of his desk as he stared at the computer screen for a while. When he decided it was time to pay attention to me, he looked up at me and said, "Victor, how are you feeling?" "I'm fine, Professor," I lied. "No, you're not. I can see it on you. This whole thing bothers you. I know it." "It doesn't. I'm okay with this." "Victor, you're a terrible liar. But I have something that might change your mind. Come with me." He opened the electronic door and led me downstairs. By now, most of the incubators had deformed creatures of various sizes inside of them, some of them much taller than humans, others the size of toddlers. Richards led me around and stopped in front of one of the incubators. "Look," he pointed, and my eyes widened. Inside of the test tube was a very small, perfectly healthy, perfectly normal human baby, given birth to by one of these monstrosities, he said. "You see, we achieved greatness." "How is this possible?" "I believed there's a variety of factors. According to all the data I've gathered, there is a very, very small chance of a normal baby being born. But there is a chance." "But that means the project is a failure. We would need to breed dozens, if not hundreds of these creatures, in hopes of getting one healthy baby." "No, it is not a failure," he rebuked. "We're going down in history. Why can't you see this?" "I'm sorry, Professor, but the only thing you'll be remembered as will be a cold, heartless murderer who pretended to be a scientist. I know what the project truly is about. I've read your files, and I know you never intended to use the project for any so-called greatness. All you wanted was to make money, and this gives you a chance to sell these creatures as a weapon on the black market. And I also know that dropping out of the project never posed any threat to the participants. You lied to us." "That's not... I've already contacted the security agency and the college. They will know everything soon enough." "How dare you?" he scoffed, before calming down. "Well, no matter." He pulled out a pistol from behind his back and pointed it at me. "The subject is a success, and the mother will be transferred to a new base for further research. I planned on killing off the students and the remaining subject tonight and offering you a chance to come with me. But since you know too much, you'll have to join them." "You can kill me, but you won't get away with what you've done. You can't stop this, Professor." Just then, there was a sound of glass cracking behind Richards. He turned around in time to see one of the test tubes breaking, the green liquid pouring out. The creature inside stumbled out, voraciously gurgling and striding towards the Professor. "Stay back!" Richards fired a few shots into the creature, but it only flinched. And then, the mother opened her eyes. Her eyes were completely black, and yet despite that, I knew that her gaze was fixed directly on me. She groaned, emitting a deep vibration as the children raised their heads in response. More tubes broke, and before I knew it, the professor and I were running back upstairs, Richards locking the door with his key card. There was a loud banging, and I turned around just enough to see a dent appear on the door. When we reached his office, Richards fumbled for his computer, frantically clicking. "No, I can't let my data get destroyed," he said to no one in particular. The loud bang now resounded directly in the door behind Richards, but he seemed oblivious to it. I didn't stay to see what would happen to him. I ran the hell out as the bangs got louder, just in time to hear the door break and a cacophony of gunshots and monstrous screams ensue. Richard screamed in agony before his own voice got drowned out. The guard was there and had a visibly confused look on his face. "There's no time, we gotta save the others," I shouted. "No, there is no time." He grabbed me by the arm. The screams of those creatures resounded behind us, and I could see them emerging from Richard's office, covered in blood, with bloodthirsty looks in their faces. I stood there for a moment, contemplating my next action. But my cowardice took hold once more, and I knew that I wouldn't be able to make it if I went for the others. So instead, I listened to the guard, and we both bolted out of there. "Go, go! Intervention will be here soon," the guard shouted as we ran. But only moments later, I heard him get grabbed as the monsters piled on top of him and ripped him into pieces. I ran outside and stopped only when I reached the gate. The guard who was there stopped me upon recognizing me, said that he was informed of the situation of the project. When I told him that there's been an outbreak, his eyes widened and told me to stay here while he investigates. I begged him not to go, mostly because I didn't want to be left alone. But my pleas fell on deaf ears, and he scurried off. I went inside the guardhouse to pick up the phone, only just then realizing that I had blood on my clothes. I had no idea how I had gotten it on me, but upon inspection, I realized it wasn't mine. I tried dialing 911, but there was no signal. Upon reading the guideline on the side, I realized that the phone only took calls, but couldn't make them. I dropped the handset when I looked at the camera feed and saw one of the guards getting jumped by one of those creatures and getting ripped to pieces. They were everywhere, and most of the guards were dead. I couldn't stay there, or I'd die. I went out of the guardhouse and ran towards the wooded area, looking behind every now and again to make sure nothing was following me. After what felt like forever, my legs started to give way. I stopped to take a break. The campus was far behind me, and no one followed me. From there, I made my way safely home. Out of all of the participants of the fertility project, I was the only confirmed survivor later on. I have no idea what exactly happened, but I heard that the biology building had a pipe explosion which caused the entire place to come down. Whether it was that or something else, I'm glad, because it hopefully killed the mother and her nasty children. I wake up every night, seeing her black, penetrating gaze through the test tube, and I feel as if she knows where I am at all times, despite not seeing me. The guilt of letting those poor students and subjects die racks me every day as well. I don't feel sorry for the human baby that most likely got killed though. Nothing good could have come out of those monsters. The only consolation I have is the fact that Richards died before he could fully weaponize and sell his project. The authorities are after me now, and I don't know if they intend to sentence me to a life in prison, but I'll make it easy for them. There's a gun next to me, and when I'm done with this, I'm going to use it. Hopefully, I'll be able to sleep peacefully again, for the first time in many months.